Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It's the Drink Talking with the Thinking Drinkers, Ben McFarland and Tom Sandon, and Mistress of Wine, Sam Capon. All the booze news and views, from absinthe to Zinfandel. Everyone needs a spirit guide.
Hello and welcome to another episode of It's a Drink Talking. I'm Sam Capon, the Mistress of Wine, and I'm joined by the lovely Ben and Tom. Boys, do you want to say something?
Hello.
Nice one.
My name's Tom and I'm one of the Thinking Drinkers and I love spirits and Thinking Drinkers have had a good week, haven't we, Ben?
We've been 7 days, you just told me.
We've been touring. It's been London Cocktail Week when this goes out.
Course,
I'll be talking about
course,
that in another podcast.
Okay.
But it's been a great week for drinking. And then we've started our global tour, which is mostly restricted to the UK regions. And we sold out the first two dates, which is extraordinary.
Bada thank boom.
You. Marvellous.
Yeah. Thank you, Didcot. Thank you.
You haven't.
What?
Haven't. Yeah. No, it's a place.
Oh, haven't. Yeah, yeah. Like, you haven't.
No, we haven't sold out. We haven't got any tickets left for haven't.
Haven't. Mm. That's around Portsmouth.
Yes, it is. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Lovely
Portsmouth. A really lovely theatre. Very nice people. We've got a new show for the tour.
Is that the one I saw?
Yes, but we've had to add about 25 minutes, half an hour.
So do you tell everyone at the end of the show about this podcast?
Yes, of course.
Yes, of course we
meet all the public afterwards and sell them our books, because that's how we pay the mortgage. Yeah. And we obviously talk all the time about it. But what's great is, and this happened in Edinburgh a couple of times as well as more recently, when people come up and say, I've listened to your podcast. And you say, it's happening.
Yeah. Marvellous. Well,
and you? How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I've been really busy as well.
You were on Saturday Kitchen on Saturday, weren't you?
I was on TV.
With Emily Sandé.
Ooh.
Yeah, big star, big
They're
star.
Big and,
what was she like? Nice.
Lovely.
Really?
Drinker?
She did enjoy the wines. I think she has to be careful because she's about to go on a massive arena tour.
Like us.
A bit like you guys.
You have to
maybe
look after your voice.
Slightly bigger crowd for her.
But
ever such a nice lady, I thought. Very kind of natural and charming and warm. I liked her enormously. I think
good.
She might have a small crush.
Mm.
You might have a small crush on her or she has one on you?
No, meet her.
Okay.
Yeah, but she's very nice indeed.
Do you think she'll come on our podcast? Did you ask her? Of course you didn't.
I didn't ask her.
Did you mention
this space, listeners?
Did you mention our podcast on national television?
I'd probably get fired.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you get
a big warning before you go on about no swearing and no product placement or pushing your own brands. So it's a bit of a no.
Okay, so what you should do is, might as well go out in a blaze of glory. Just go. Just fucking listen to our podcast, all right?
That's what you should be doing.
Well, maybe I'll do that on my last show.
When this goes big, you don't need Saturday Kitchen anymore.
Either way, Sam, when you do it, it will be your last show.
And it does leave a gap open for Tom and I to step in.
Do you know much about wine?
Of course. Not really. Anyway, I'm doing a spit or swallow this week. And I suddenly found these in my bag on the bus.
What?
Listeners, they look like acid tabs. Not that I know what they acid tabs look like.
So I suddenly thought I'll change my swallow. I think I'm going to link this into my swallow. So basically, what I have here are some bits of paper. Do look suspicious, like you can sell them outside a nightclub or inside a nightclub. And they've got a certain chemical on that's going to tell me if you're a super taster. So let's see. So basically, you take that one.
I've just had coffee.
Oh, really? You take that one. So basically,
should we drink water before doing
You may
this?
Have a quick slug of water. You can share mine. No one's got anything.
No,
gross.
That's cleared up.
One for you, Ben. Do you want one? Okay, then what we're going to do is I'm going to count to three, and we're all going to take one of these.
Wait a minute. Oh.
And I just want you to describe, I don't want to ruin a surprise.
But say what we're tasting.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, one, two, three. Right, so it's on your tongue. Mm. Do you get quite bad bitterness?
Yeah. From metallic. It's funny because it started off as quite papery. Yeah. And then it went but full-blown quite, bitter. Yeah.
Right, my husband and son can't taste that at all.
Really?
Yeah. I gave it to Wilf, that's who's weird. Five. Yeah, my husband and child, literally, which explains the enormous amount of salt, I think, they put on their food.
You sure you didn't give them some other tabs? No. Did they start dancing?
That's lingering,
but that's quite bad, isn't it?
Yeah.
Literally, Ed and Wilf didn't get anything from that at all. Like, Ed's like, give me another one. There's nothing on there at all. So I gave another one. There's nothing on that. I did another one. Really bitter. Gave one to my child
that
in the morning.
Uncomfortably bitter. Well,
so I think maybe we're all super tasters. That's what that means.
Well, it makes sense. We're doing this podcast. We should be.
which basically means we've got more taste buds.
Right.
So we're more sensitive.
So my understanding of the taste bud issue, because we talk about taste a lot, and actually a lot of what you taste comes from your sense of smell. So we do a tasting in our show, in fact, where we get everyone to hold their nostrils so that they can't smell anything, then take a mouthful, release their nostrils, and that's when they get a lot of the assertive, particularly on a gin, like the aromatic botanicals. But as you get older, your taste buds die, don't they? So this is why we start to crave much more intense flavours, whereas kids won't eat their broccoli. Yeah.
It's
knackered.
So, that's right. You only have five tastes, and that's whatever they are. I was getting them wrong. Salty, sour, sweet, bitter, and umami.
Right.
Umami. And then it's aroma and taste that creates flavour. So, really, when you're tasting wine, you're not tasting wine, you're smelling wine. Mm. So that's why the swirling and everything's so important. And I did that recently, what you did with the gin, where we're all told to eat a Skittle without holding our nose. And then you had to open, had to get your fingers off your nose and then try and guess the flavour of the Skittle.
Mm.
And it was quite fun.
Yeah.
And I got mine right. It was green.
It was green flavour.
It was green flavour. It was lime. And but you have a certain number of taste buds, and it probably means you're sensitive to grapefruit, green tea, and actually there are certain wines that I'm not crazy about, very tannic wines that a lot of people in wine trade love and I don't like. So I also, as a normal taster, because I also thought it'd be weird doing this job being very sensitive, but maybe just my husband and child are sub-tasters and we're actually kind of normal having that reaction, and some people will be barfing.
The great British public's palate prefers sweet, doesn't it? And that's the way they move. But actually the weird thing about that is that bitterness, I tend to crave it. And now it's dying off a bit. I kind of feel like I want another hit of it.
Do you find that I'm always amazed with my two boys? My two boys. their tastes are I won't go into that.
They're questionable. If they're with you, I'll level you.
No, my two younger boys, who are my sons, who are 1 and 3, they quite like bitter tastes. Which, if you think about it, historically, bitterness was seen as a danger
berries.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Breast milk sweet.
Yes. Mm.
So a craving for kind of sweet things is meant to start as an infant. And never really goes.
So I'm amazed at how sweet it is, the more I drink of it.
Yeah.
But that's why I was sort of surprising about the Negroni, which is a cocktail.
Also, that's a bit sour for me.
Well, it's very bitter. And the thing is that we had this idea of a Negroni that it takes 25 to drink before you actually get on top of it. They're Campari, especially. But there's suddenly a craze for Negronis. Mm. And people are drinking them in their early 20s. I think, blimey, your palate.
But it's like when we went on, when we did our book on the West Coast of America, and we were just thrust into this world of beer that is sort of spearheaded by these very bitter aromatic hops. And this bitterness at first was, I mean, after a couple of days, we were like, I don't know how we're going to do this. This is too bitter. But then, it's a bit like the Tabasco, which is very prevalent, especially towards Southern California with the Mexican influence. The Tabasco is with everything, and you start having a little bit with your breakfast,
and then
you're just craving.
Yeah.
And there is ulcers. then you
and the doctor saying, stop eating that.
I met someone recently who said they had a friend who walks around with chilies on them all the time, and just crunchy.
Well, the people who are into it, I've got a couple of friends who are like that, who genuinely have had stomach ulcers. I think you have to watch it. So yeah, that's a tip for you.
Quite,
listeners.
Yeah, yeah, and so that was my that was my swallow.
Was it?
I just, I think the importance of taste, the importance of taste buds. I think it's quite important to maybe try and work out what you are, because that will help shape your preferences.
Yeah.
Like, you know, are you more likely to like wines that are slightly fruitier, or do you really like kind of, you know, you feel like a sub-taster like my husband, which I think he is. No, do you...
Sub-human?
I think you're a non-taster.
He's a sub-taster.
You're a non-taster, a normal taster, or a super taster.
Okay.
I think we guys are probably...
Well, I'd hope we're getting close to it.
To super. But it's actually being super taster is not actually a good thing.
Okay.
Like, I think you'd want, in our line of work, you'd want to be normal, because you don't want to be sensitive. You want to have a palate that enjoys most things. And that's not
up.
Too... You
know, so what you're saying is that is actually... It's not whether you have a sensitivity to all tastes and you're just very good at tasting things. It's just that
you're sensitive.
You're very sensitive
to
different
things.
Yeah,
you've got more taste buds, ergo you taste things in a more heightened way than other people. And so, for example, you probably, like, if you're someone who craves things like vindaloos or chilies, and you probably have less taste buds, so you need stronger flavours to get that hit. Whereas if you've got more taste buds, you basically need sort of more subtle flavours, because otherwise it's too intense.
As we're approaching, well, we're sort of approaching Christmas, so this isn't massively topical, but, you know, Brussels sprouts. A lot of people don't like Brussels sprouts, but there's some people, I love Brussels sprouts, but there's some people that apparently eating Brussels sprouts is like eating a little ball of tin foil. It is really metallic, virtually inedible. It's a horrible experience. And those same people, when they eat asparagus, their wee doesn't smell.
What?
Yeah.
What have you met one of these people?
No.
Or is this like a kind of...
I read it somewhere. I can't remember.
Myth.
I genuinely can't remember where. But it's...
well, it must be true.
Viz?
Yeah.
I've only ever seen you reading Viz.
It was the Beano.
So that was my swallow.
Good one.
Thanks. My spit is going to be hangovers.
Okay.
Last time I saw you guys, I was
you were disgraced.
Yeah, I wasn't great form, and I just thought, you know what, it's a bit of a shame, isn't it, that you can partake of a favourite beverage, and then not feel so clever the next day.
Well, have you heard this week the guy? He's called Professor Nutt. He's the guy. He's been quite prevalent in a lot of the sort of pro. Legalization of drugs. He was the sort of drug czar and wrote lots of reports. And anyway, he's fronting some research that has created a chemical alternative to alcohol. This is something we should delve a little bit deeper into.
Yes, I have seen this.
And the idea that you can get all the benefits of alcohol, such as sociability and relaxation,
okay, so that's interesting.
Without a hangover.
Because for me, it's all about the taste. I drink wine because I like the taste of it. And, you know, yes, if I have a, you know, couple of glasses of wine at the end of the day, it's to relax, enjoy the taste, have it with food, whatever. But I'm not drinking to chase the buzz. And increasingly not, because I don't want the hangover the next day. And we've all got small kids, and that's rough.
It's terrible. But also, what I find is the best drinks of the evening are the first two and maybe three. And after that, actually,
I am
probably just drinking to
keep the buzz
sort
going.
Of sustain that feeling, rather than actually going for those real moments of pleasure, which come quite early on. It's like a lot of things in my life. They come...
Very fast.
They arrive right at the beginning, and by the midway through, I've just done it.
And then by the end, you're apologetic because you behaved badly.
And I've got a question to you, insight towards something else. So something that really annoys me that goes into this whole hangover spit category is, do you get people constantly asking you questions like, hangovers are much worse if I drink cheap wine, or I'm sure it's the sulfites, or I'm sure it's because the wine's cheap, is that right? And for me, I just want to go, No. It's like, you are basically having a hangover fundamentally because you've drunk too much. And alcohol's a poison.
Yeah.
So basically, it's kind of that simple for me.
Yeah.
It's like, hangovers are shit. Drink more water. Drink less booze. Carbohydrates and some fat help in advance. I think caffeine actually is meant to slow down the absorption of the ethanol. There are a couple of things that people can be sensitive to. Some people complain about the sulfites. You know, wine labels, it contains sulfites. That's because it's an allergen. But for like... less than 1% of people. And there's more sulfur in a bag of apricots. And you never have anyone saying,
I've got a really bad
Christ,
hangover.
I've got a bad hangover. Oh, those apricots. They might give you something else.
They're on the toilet.
Yeah, they're not good for the guts.
They're very good.
But they're too good. But I don't think they're responsible for hangover. And then some people are sensitive to some histamines that can be produced in red wines. And they might only have a problem from, like, red wines. Mm. That is potentially true, in which case you might want to take an antihistamine. Mm. Like, if you're constantly having red wine and cheese or fermented foods and getting a hangover, then swerve down that way. And then the cheap wine thing, I can't think of anything scientific for that at all. Mm. It's basically grapes, whether it's grown in a posh vineyard or a massive vineyard, it basically goes through the same fundamental process and has an alcohol at the end.
I think with beer, I think a lot of mass-produced beer will use ingredients that aren't particularly natural to perhaps help with the fermentation or...
Okay, and might give you more of a hangover?
Yes, I mean, it's very difficult to tell because most people, if they have a big night out, will be drinking those kind of beers.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a bit like people say, oh, tequila gives me a headache or gives me
ports,
a terrible hangover.
People say about ports because you're drinking a port because you got to that stage already.
Yeah, I mean, don't go, I'm going to have one glass of port tonight and then I'm going to go to bed.
Yeah. It's unlikely.
It's an occasion.
Yeah.
And I just think that if you drink water, I mean, for instance, this weekend we did our show in two different towns, both of which we drove back from, got to bed quite late. But it's quite a physical show, isn't it? We're running around a lot. We sweat quite a lot. It's full on.
And you feel hungover the next day.
Next day,
dehydration.
Hungover to hell. I'm like, this is really unfair. I didn't have anything to drink last night.
Yeah. I get that, even off a glass of wine, if I haven't drunk enough that day, if I haven't drunk enough water that day.
Yeah, so it is dehydration.
Water.
If you keep water going, then that's good. Then so drink water, people, but also mix it with alcohol. It's good.
But the people ask it on spirits in terms of which is the best spirits, and they say when I drink vodka, I don't get as bad a hangover. When it comes to the distillation process, they're taking out a lot of those nasty congeners, the things that actually give you the hangovers. So when you're talking about just fermented products, that's probably one of the reasons that they're a bit heavier, that a lot of those alcohols are still in there, and then they distill them out. However, I challenge anyone to drink, and I will challenge them, a bottle of vodka or a bottle of whiskey and come back and say, I feel much better after the vodka. Because you won't. You'll feel like shit. So just drink less. Drink better.
Excellent. That's a brilliant conclusion to that section, boys. There's a little strap line there. Thank you.
Well done, Sam.
And we are now going to move on to the tasting part of our podcast.
We're going to drink your recognise.
Which I'm going to get Ben to introduce.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You're listening to It's the Drink Talking.
Well, everybody, this is as ever going to be the highlight of the podcast. We'll see. We're just at the end of the summer, autumn sort of part. It's starting to get a bit cold. So I'm trying to extend the summer feel with some fruit IPAs.
Ooh, that sounds right up my street.
Yes, fruity. So the IPA, that's been a kind of poster boy for the craft brewing movement. We've talked about that before, but if you hadn't listened to this podcast before, then it's India Pale Ale, originally a British beer style, first brewed in London and in Burton-upon-Trent, shipped over to India with more hops, more alcohol to withstand a long sea journey over there, 6 months, got there, I'm in perfect condition. So quite hoppy beer, quite strong. Then it sort of died a death, sort of disappeared, and life was breathed back into it in the 80s when the American craft brewers who were inspired by what's going on in Europe reawoken it from its slumber and brewed it with more hops, more alcohol than their British counterparts. But now it means that everyone is brewing an IPA on both sides of the Atlantic. Massive IPAs in America, really, really hoppy, really, really aromatic and really bitter. A lot of UK breweries are now aping the American interpretations of what was originally a British beer style, so it's bouncing back and forth across the pond. Every craft brewer in the world is doing an IPA, pretty much. So there's more and more pressure on brewers to differentiate themselves with their IPAs. And with these new world hops, so American hops and Kiwi hops, they're incredibly fruity. So you've got stuff like the Mosaic hop, which is very sort of sweet, fruity aromas. Cascade, grapefruit and citrusy. You've got Citra, which is, again, quite grapefruity. So you've got all these hops that are adding fruit notes to the beer anyway. And so what they're doing now is putting fruit into the brewing process on top of that. Or they'll take extract, they'll also extract it, depending on how well they can sort of dovetail it into the brewing process. So it was a big thing a couple of years ago in America, where they're still sort of fruit IPAs are still quite popular. And it's sort of being done by quite a few breweries over here. Now, fruit beers...
I'm surprised that's allowed. Like in wine, you can just chuck in an orange.
Yeah,
you
man,
know?
We're crazy guys. We can do whatever we want. No, not like you,
like
squares.
Well, wine is just fruit juice, isn't it? So I suppose you wouldn't...
Yeah, what do I want?
You wouldn't want to adulterate them.
No, and well,
would you like lobbing a banana or something?
Yeah, when does it? I suppose that's it. When does it go into the?
Don't ask me
technical
questions, Tom.
Jesus Christ!
Okay, I thought we discussed
this. Edit this bit that shows that you're a complete bum clown. don't know your subject. Do they put it into the?
No,
when they ferment it, or do they put it in at the end?
And... Well, traditionally, if like lambic beers, they will add whole cherries or raspberries into the barrel.
Yeah.
As it's fermented.
Okay.
Do you remember we went and saw those guys in Cantillon in Brussels?
Yes.
And there was that little boy straddling a barrel with his little hand, and he was dropping the cherries into the beer.
This podcast is turning into Ben and his boys, isn't it? I don't remember this guy.
No, he was the brewer's son, I think, so it was all right, but it did look suspiciously like child labour.
Yeah. What are you looking at me? He's the one talking.
Right.
This is all going in.
So,
in the
anyway, they add fruit, mostly towards the end, and it just makes it more fruity, really, and they are very nice.
Okay,
so
the
two
cans.
So the first one is brewed in Peckham, South London, by the Bianca Road Brew Company, who are a relatively recent addition to the craft beer scene. So this has got the addition of blood orange juice and orange zest.
So juice. So they haven't put big
Okay. It's quite fruity. It's got quite a fruit juice appearance.
Okay.
It's a bit like Reef. Remember Reef from the
90s? Yeah, I was going to go with it. Lilt,
do you remember? Yeah, there was Reef ready to drink. Those Alco Pops.
I do, yeah.
So anyway,
it's quite poor head retention. Is that an affliction of these beers?
I'll be honest, the head should probably be a bit better than that. Especially because
it might be our glassware. We should defend the beer.
What's it called?
It is called LA Bloods. Which is, I refer to the gang culture of Los Angeles.
Are you being serious?
Do they have
the
Crips?
Yeah, but it's also blood
orange.
Oh, right, yeah.
You could have this one with some crisps, because then you could have Bloods and
Crips. Crips would have to be blueberries, wouldn't they? Were they the blue hats?
Billy Blue Hat.
Billy Blue Hat.
Roger Red Hat.
I'm not sure I can taste oranges.
If they call themselves the Red Hats or the Blue Hats, maybe that would have taken some of the aggression out of the whole thing.
And not carried guns.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oranges. Do you actually taste oranges?
Yes, I do. I think you really get the blood orange.
I get the bitterness. Yeah. I don't really get a sense of sort of citrus sweet orange, but I get the bitterness, which is going back to your swallow.
From yeah, no.
That's what I really enjoy about it. It's, that's why I keep going back to it.
And it would be delicious with some crisps, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. As all beers tend to
Or nuts.
Or nuts.
I like them.
Spicy nut.
Yeah. A wasabi pea.
Ooh,
get me.
Get me.
But I like just, that.
Yeah,
I think
choice.
It's cause what,
4.5 alcohol.
That's
I can
quite,
see.
Yeah, that's quite okay. I suppose that's all right. 4.5, not too strong, not too weak. The problem is people still buy a beer based on it being close to 5%, don't they? So, as we've found with our own beer, Hobo, if you go too far below 5%, actually some consumers won't drink it
because they think it's too weak.
They do are still looking for a bit of a buzz,
bit
and
of a buzz,
value
yeah.
for money, especially when it's coming in a beautiful can, which we can see. But
it's got little
think,
paisley shapes on it.
Yeah, people think they're not getting value for money, but I actually tend to look for beers that are
a bit lower.
A bit lower these
yeah,
days.
Yeah, we do.
That comes down to your hangover chat.
Ben, was it you who introduced me to the beer toast? We
yes.
do that in this show.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
It's so good. I was enjoying
it everywhere
weekend.
Now. Yeah. They're doing a really good job with it, aren't they?
Yeah, delicious.
It's a good one, isn't it?
Really good.
This one's quite gassy. I've got slight
reaction.
Slight comeback to it. The thing with fruit beers, it always rings alarm bells with me because I just think that they don't work very often. They're often one style
of beer.
The
Belgian ones are so yummy. Like a nice crack beer. So it's called is that
creek.
Creek.
A crack beer is something totally different.
The LA Bloods are all over that, I tell you.
They were flying
they were big fans.
Yeah. Don't drink crack beer, kids. Yeah, the classic Belgian ones with real fruit are lovely and they're much more like a wine, really, than a beer. But then it's something that a lot of brewers take shortcuts on. They just put some fruit essence in there, or and that synthetic sweetness really comes through, and you lose a lot of the depth to it. Having the IPA as a style as the base is quite useful because, all like I said, a lot of the New World aromatic hops are very fruity to start with, and so this just sort of bolsters up that character. So the second one we're going for,
this is more like an IPA colour, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
you've got the this is from this is called massive. Effortless Grapefruit IPA.
Oh my goodness!
God, that
and
is,
this comes
God.
From the
chocolate.
Dip your finger into
wait, hold on.
The head
chocolate.
And taste it. That is
what are you on about?
Pure grapefruit.
Really?
That's incredible.
Oh, I know what you mean. It does taste that a bit is, like chocolate.
Yeah.
Now that is like
like a Quality Street.
Yeah.
You know, like a fondant.
Yeah, I don't
the
know. I know what you mean, but it's not.
That
it
is
tastes
Starburst.
Like an orange.
That is Starburst.
It tastes like an orange Quality Street.
Or are you not thinking about maybe a Starburst?
Taste it. Taste
opal
it.
Fruit.
Yeah.
Opal fruit, you mean?
Okay.
Yeah, opal fruit, of course, sorry.
And it's from the Captain Lawrence Brewing Company, who are based in New York. They're famous for their Kolsch beer. I think in our new book, Tom, World's Best Beers, second edition, which was only out a couple of weeks ago, which we've an astonishing display of restraint. We've not plugged at all. Please go and buy it. It's World's Best Beers on them. It's been out for 2 weeks. We haven't talked about it.
Stacking the pulping factory shelves right now. So no, please buy it.
No. It's flying off the shelves, I hear.
Where can I buy this if I wanted to?
I bought this.
Amazon, Waterstones.
Where did I buy this?
the beer.
I bought this from Borough Wines.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. So they're really good sort of East Coast player. Their Kolsch beer is very, very good.
I love a Kolsch.
And they do some amazing barrel-aged sours as well.
Can I also describe the can?
Go for it.
Okay, it's quite a cute can. It's kind of nice, shiny, metallic
green
with bits of yellow. And it's really cute. It's got a picture of a fruit, which you can only assume is a...
Grapefruit.
Yeah.
Yep.
Reclining on a little deck chair. And it's just really cute, metallic, lots of greens and pinks and yellows. It's very
striking. But it's not appealing to children, is it?
No.
I think it's probably appealing to women.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, that's rather cliché, didn't it?
Well, you are a woman, so...
No, because it's got natural grapefruit flavour, so it's a bit fruitier. Yeah. It's only 4.5%, and they have actually gone and splashed quite a lot of pink all over the can.
Yeah, I think... Is there a picture of a kitten on there?
Some shoes?
No, but the grapefruit's definitely wearing some lippy and some nice flip-flops.
Okay.
Just a thought.
See, if we just said that, we'd be absolutely murdered.
Of course.
But I take your point. It is maybe a female-friendly beer, but not exclusively female, because females can enjoy a wide spectrum of flavours, just as men can.
They can get jobs and everything these days.
Okay.
Now, Captain Lawrence, I'm going to put you on the spot. Who was Captain Lawrence? What's that all about?
You don't know Larry. Old Larry.
Yeah.
Captain Lawrence was the name of the brewer's cat, I think, wasn't it?
That'll do. Yeah. Yeah, Captain Lawrence. I don't know. Doesn't matter, does it? What's more important, Tom, is don't be dragged into the marketing of this. It's all about the flavours.
Oh, you know me, Ben. I like to look beyond the drink.
I definitely prefer that to the LA Bloods.
I've got to say I do as well.
LA Bloods.
We should say, for the benefit of the listeners who are maybe put off by things like Starburst and other... I mean, it's very sweet at first in terms of the
aromas, but it's not sweet on the palate
at all.
But it
does, it really dries out, doesn't it? And it's quite a short, so that bitterness...
It's really well balanced. It's got nice acid, it has got some bitterness, but it's got these lovely flavours that are reminiscent of orange and grapefruit.
But that's not just coming from the grapefruit zest that is added to the beer. Mm. It's dry hopped with Mosaic and Palisade hops.
Oh, it's a Palisade then, for sure.
Yeah, that's what's
for
doing
real.
What's we're doing.
that's definitely what's doing. But dry hopping means they add the hops at the end of the brewing process. All the aromatics come from that. So I think if they even took the grapefruit away, it would still be a particularly fruity beer.
I'm going to buy
some.
But
I think that's really
delicious.
Good.
I love it.
Captain Lawrence there.
Well, that's one of my favourites, along with the toast we did before. I'd put that in my top five that we've done.
Now, what I've noticed at the moment is that whilst it's great what's going on with the craft beer scene here and all the British brewers, the Americans are just a bit further ahead, and the smaller breweries, and Captain Lawrence are one of the big guys now, but they were small originally.
Have they been bought? Or are they?
No, they are entirely independent, as far as I know, yeah. But they are certainly seen as independent. But the quality control of the American beers that you see over here, even though they've travelled over, is just... It's impeccable.
Well, considering how far it's come, it tastes very fresh. I mean, that's partly down to
the New York one, right?
Yeah. Mm. Okay, it's not that far away.
Tropical refreshment all year long.
Well, it's probably come over on a boat, so it's taken at least a week. Yeah. Unless they've flown that one over for you specially.
No, they didn't. But if they wanted to fly us from here to there,
well,
to
that
see
would be the thing.
How it was made.
Yeah.
Then
compared to a normal comparison.
I'd come too.
Yeah. I have got another can here called 5 Points Field Day Citrus
Pale.
That
does look like one for ladies.
It's got an actual picture of a kitten on it. Oh my God.
What the?
And that's used. You can have that.
Thanks.
That used zest from Sicilian lemons, not just any lemons, Sicilian lemons.
Oh.
And they've got grapefruit zest in there, and that's made with the Mosaic hop as well.
I'll enjoy that at home tonight, if that's okay.
So they are, keep an eye out for them, because they are.
With my Salmon on Croûte.
Yep, and your sub below par husband who wouldn't be able to taste any of it, whatever.
Subhuman.
Subhuman husband
who probably thinks it tastes like water.
Yes. Thanks, Ben.
You're very welcome.
I like it when you
make you happy.
Make me happy. Actually, it brings something I like to taste.
So few men do. Sub husbands.
Tom, you're on the spot now.
I am. I'm going
to
do the
you.
Legend.
You are this week's
legend.
Host of the Legend of Liquor section.
Yes. And I've gone with someone living and working this week, because I think I've only ever done someone from the past. It's not either of you two, although you are, in my eyes, legends. But it's just been London Cocktail Week, and it's been a big celebration of cocktails in London, but people from all over the UK and indeed the world have arrived in London, and I'll talk a bit more about that in another podcast. But I thought I would celebrate someone whose world is cocktails, and so I'm going to focus on Jake Berger. He's my legend, not just because his name is Berger.
Cool name.
Which is a very cool name. If you're in the industry or you know of bartenders, you might not be the first choice, because you might think if we talk about cocktail legends, we'd go back into history and talk about people like Jerry Thomas, who in the 1860s was the first man to write down cocktail recipes in a book and get it published. And throughout history, there have been bartenders who've made a big name for themselves. And more recently, Dale DeGroff in the 90s was partly responsible for the resurgence of cocktail culture. In New York, he was making cosmopolitans. That's why I'm looking at you, Sam, because I know you love
Cosmo.
Did he invent
the Cosmo?
He did not invent the Cosmo. No, the Cosmo cranberry juice and vodka was actually something that Ocean Spray really promoted as a way of getting more people to drink more cranberry juice.
It worked.
You couldn't get away with that sort of marketing these days. But no, what he did was he made it sexy again. He put an orange flame over the top of it, so that's what brought people in. He lit a match over the zest of an orange, and it let off a big flame over the top of the drink, and people just went crazy. Because back then, fire was new to them, I guess.
Yes. New invention back in the 80s.
Wow, fire. Whore. But Jake is a more contemporary bartender, and he started his life off in Leeds, but he runs a bar now called The Distillery in Portobello Road.
Mm-hmm.
And he also makes a gin. And he has been making cocktails since he was before he was 18, but he's been serving them from the age of 18 over in Leeds, before cocktails were at all popular, really, in this country. And we went through a phase in the 1930s where places like the Savoy, the American bar, would have been popular for cocktails. But really, in the 90s in this country,
I doubt
either of you were really drinking...
Vodka and orange.
Vodka and orange, exactly. You weren't really drinking mixed drinks. So Jake was right there at the forefront, pushing them in Leeds, and he worked in a place called the Townhouse in Leeds. Anyone from Leeds drinking in the 90s might remember that place, and Jake was really one of the pioneers of the culture there, and was approached by a guy called Jed. Jed's surname has escaped me. Can you remember his surname?
I don't know. It sounds sinister, though. He's approached by a man called Jed. Yeah.
Jed won't forgive me. But he runs a company called Lelex, and they asked him to come in and set up his own bar. And Jake's bar in Leeds is now an institution, and I think Ben will agree with me, one of the great bars in the world. I was there for my stag do, and Ben fell over and landed on his bottom and back and went through a glass table.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Good night.
And we were picking glass out of his back in the morning.
I totally forgot about that.
Well, yeah. Probably for the best.
That's quite dangerous.
That's the sort of thing that would happen with Jake's bar. Yeah. It's sort of hedonistic, but also great cocktails. And then he came down to London and he opened a bar called the Portobello Star, which is a very important bar in London cocktail culture in the last 10 years. And what he has managed to do, and the reason I find him so legendary in his status, is combine really great quality cocktails with having a good time. Mm. And there are some people in life who think cocktails are a bit sniffy and a bit sort of, what's the word, snobby.
And also getting some more wacky ones, like people are putting really like foraging ingredients in and savoury ingredients in.
Well, this is
and things that I'm finding a bit bonkers, like I wouldn't go and head out. Like, have you been to this bar Dandelion?
Yes.
Well, like, that's meant to be quite cool. I've never been. And he's just won.
He's picking up awards all the time. And they do
I love a cocktail. Yeah. I want to go there. Where is it?
It's on Embankment. It's just part of the Sea Containers building just facing the Thames.
Oh,
it's a fantastic bar.
Yes.
But say something like that. Jake Berger used an ostrich egg in a cocktail competition about 15 years ago.
He opened it with a chainsaw.
Yeah. So, I mean, in terms of wacky stuff, I mean, it's arguably all been done before, but Jake really has managed to push boundaries. This is a man who, on one shift in Mojo, I think it was in Leeds, managed to set fire to some fridges. And bearing in mind, fridges are made of metal and glass.
That's quite good.
That is an achievement.
The irony, I was trying to explain to my three-year-old the difference between hot and cold, and I took him to the fridge and opened it and said, "This is cold." Mm. And then he would say, no, that's hot, that's hot. And we had an argument about it.
Right.
But it turns out that fridges can be hot.
Yeah, he knew.
Maybe he was right.
But he's taken that sense of fun, but he's also massively pioneering and also really well-informed. And the thing is, if you sit down with Jake and talk to him about drinks, he's got an encyclopedic knowledge of weird and wonderful facts, but also really important information about drinks. So you can sit at a bar with him
for
a few hours, and really, he's like the consummate bartender.
And where's he based now?
The Portobello Star has recently closed because they put all their investment and time into the distillery, which is just down the road. But this place
is Portobello Gin?
It's Portobello Gin, because Jake is also behind Portobello Gin. And they set this place up. It is phenomenal. It doesn't seem to be getting the global recognition that it deserves. I mean, we've just recently had the 50 best bars in the world. I'd put it on there. It's just a phenomenal space where they've got a distillery in it. They've got a bar where they've got barrel spirits. So spirits, they bought them by the barrel, and they're there still aging and taking on the wood while they serve
and
them directly
that?
From a pipe.
In Portobello.
On Portobello Road, so you can drink it from the barrel, which is barrel fresh beer. Yeah. I mean, essentially, I've not seen many people doing this in the world of spirits. He's making incredible cocktails in this space. He's got wicked tapas as well. You can actually sit there and eat in one floor.
I love
it. And he's turned it into a hotel. So you can do all of this. You can do a gin training day and make your own gin there on site. And he'll give you a class on gin. So you could spend a good few hours there and sleep there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an institution to gin and alcohol.
But also, one of the key roles of a bartender is the idea that if you're sat at a bar on your own and they're working and they're having a chat with you, that they can be entertaining and talk about pretty much anything.
Stuff.
I would happily sit at the end of the bar and talk to him because he's funny. He knows stuff about much beyond drink. He's a bit of a sort of bar philosopher as well. So
A raconteur.
But that make him sound a little bit kind of Peter Ustinov, but he's not.
No.
He's just got good chat.
He's got great chat. I've been on trips all around the world. You know, I go on loads of luxury trips, guys. Yeah, but I have been on trips all around the world with him, and just to see him in action and ask the questions that me, as a drinks journalist, you know, if I remember my notepad, which invariably I haven't, but he is asking the questions that I feel like I should be asking because he's that enthusiastic and that knowledgeable. Mm. I just think people like him make cocktail culture relevant to a wider audience, and you can be really, really geeky about cocktails and the ingredients and how they're made, and you can be into the paraphernalia, but sometimes in the cocktail world it can become a bit fine-tuned and it's
navel-gazing,
and it does at the risk of keeping people out of it that might otherwise
take an
interest.
He did, a few years ago, we did something online called Jake's Jokes, which was, if you type Dwink plus Jake's Jokes into the Google
search engine
machine, it will come up, and there's some really good gags that he does as
well. He could be a stand-up. He's got the mannerisms of a great stand-up. Jed Felton was the name of his business partner at Lelex. I should say that because Jed will be annoyed that I've forgotten his surname. And actually, Lelex have been hugely important in opening all these bars, Jake's Bars and the Portobello Star. He's been hugely influential in our industry, and I think in bringing people who like drinks into drinks. And there aren't enough people like Jake. I love him.
I've heard you say it, you're a little
he's
main
a man
crush going on
I
here.
I could love. Well done, Jake.
Well, thumbs up for Jake. Yeah. I think that he sounds pretty legendary.
Yes.
So indeed. Well done for that, Tom. And that wraps up another podcast from It's a Drink Talking. So just leaves us all to say goodbye.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheerio.
Bye.
This was a Grand Cru podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
From 7 Digital.